If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello and welcome to a Tuesday live right here on the early line on Sports Grid and all across the Sports Grid network. That includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination to consume everything all across the grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We are here together for the next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. And on this Tuesday, the madness truly begins. It is the start of the 2025 men's NCAA tournament with first four action in Dayton, Ohio, including a team that's inclusion into the big dance was slightly controversial. North Carolina takes on San Diego State, two teams that in the last 3 years have played in a national championship game. We will get you set as we continue to break down the bracket and go all around the big dance, including our doubleheader of first four action on this Tuesday evening in Dayton. And didn't you know, DRS, the 2025 MLB season now officially underway. Game number one starting right now. Already underway, already in the seventh inning stretch over in Tokyo as the Tokyo series between the Dodgers and the Cubs is now started. The Dodgers hold a 3-1 lead. Action around the association. All of that and plenty more in these 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah, big day, and it's fun today to see that the NCAA tournament does start. There are some other lower-level games and other tournaments that will be played, but obviously the central focus of the show will be on the NCAA tournament, how to actually go about doing that, getting in your brackets here, picking your national champion, and hopefully not blowing up your brackets within the first few hours and few games on Thursday afternoon. But Major League Baseball season is here, if you will. Next week, the unofficial, official start to the Major League Baseball regular season, so we'll wait for that as well.
We got 9 days until everybody plays on opening day. That's a week from Thursday, next Thursday, if you will. But the two-game Tokyo series has begun officially. The first pitch of the 2025 MLB campaign has already happened. Started this morning just about 2 hours ago over in Tokyo. Of course, a large Japanese crowd excited to see Shohei Ohtani and many Japanese stars now playing in the bigs, including LA starter Yoshinobu Yamamoto, off to a great start this year for the Dodgers. The Cubs strike first, but the Dodgers do answer with a three-run fifth inning at this moment. DRS heading to the home half of the seventh. The Cubbies, the home team, the Dodgers hold a 3-1 lead.
Yeah, I looked at yesterday. I thought one of the better plays would be under 8 runs just for the first game of the season. Two really good pitchers on the mound. It really came through there. And by the way, if you were a first five inning better, boy, you like that three-run top of the fifth inning from the Dodgers if you had that side and sort of that crushing defeat there if you had the Cubs with that 1-0 lead. But it's 3-1 right now, bottom of the seventh inning, two outs, no runners on base. So as long as the bullpens hold up, we're probably looking at an under to start the season. No surprise there for me.
4 innings of shutout work from Shota Imanaga, the starter for Chicago, Yoshi Yamamoto. 5 innings on the bump for the Dodgers, the reigning World Series champs. Only an earned run and 3 hits allowed. So, as of right now, LA ahead 3-1. To Donnie's point, the Dodgers a hefty favorite, as we probably expect for a good majority of 162 games this year. A total of 7.5 trending toward the under at this moment. Donnie, how would you define Paul George's first year in Philadelphia? that has officially come to a close. The 76ers are shutting down PG because of an ailing left knee injury. DRS signed a 4-year, $211 million deal this offseason. 41 games, averaged about 16 points per game, had better podcast success than he did on the basketball floor.
Smart move to shut him down. I'm not even so sure, to be honest, that he's fully injured at this point, but a business decision had to be made because this season is done with Joel Embiid and Paul George. Maybe it comes with Maxey. And by the way, yesterday, blowing out the Rockets early in that basketball game only to lose in overtime. At least they lost that one. But if you're asking me about the decision for Paul George coming to the Sixers, I like the decision. But watching it play out this year, it's been a disaster. And also, the smart move is to tank because the Sixers have a top six protected pick that they need to be sixth or better, and they understand that that's more important than Paul George playing a meaningless 15 games to end the season.
A Philadelphia failure this year for the 76ers. Yeah. The Golden State Warriors last night riding a 7-game win streak at home as an 8-point favorite against the Denver Nuggets. An 8-point favorite, though, and Denver did not have Nikola Jokic out there on the floor, nor Jamal Murray, nor even Christian Brown. So it should have been a comfortable win for Golden State to make it 8 in a row. The rest of the Nuggets had other ideas. Aaron Gordon posts 38 points. Russell Westbrook with a vintage game, 12 points, 12 boards, and 16 dimes for a triple-double as the shorthanded Nuggets snapped a 7-game win streak for Golden State, winning outright as an 8-point road underdog, 114-105.
Hey, by the way, this game closed at close to 13 points once those final rosters were scheduled yesterday. And yesterday I said, you know what? I like it at 3.5. Like, I was like, man, Golden State Warriors, give me that. You know, keep that streak intact. Now look at the final score. I'm saying, okay, well, that's a good night. And nobody played for the Denver Nuggets, and yet they won on the road by almost double digits when getting close to 2 touchdowns at the closing gun. So the NBA is just so crazy, and the NBA gets worse and worse as the season goes on, just for stability purposes. How could the Warriors on a streak at home get beat by the Nuggets when they basically told you, hey, look, we're throwing this game. Here's our uniforms. Let me lay it at center court. Do whatever you have to do. And they lost? Crazy times.
Just the second loss for Golden State with Jimmy Butler in the fold. A very cold night for Stephen Curry, 6 of 21 from the floor. Golden State had one of the longest win streaks actively around the NBA. The longest entering last night, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who won 8 consecutive games. But then Indiana had other ideas as well. The Pacers on the road in overtime snapped that 8-game skid, 132-130, the victory for the Pacers. They went outright as an 8.5-point underdog. Huge night for Obi Toppin, DRS. 2 made 3-pointers in the final 30 seconds of OT, including the game winner with about 3.5 seconds remaining.
Yeah, I like the Pacers yesterday getting the points so that they can hang around that number, let alone they win it 132-130 in overtime at this point. It was a close game, hard fought all the way through. Nice overtime pace. 28 points, by the way, in that overtime stanza. Pushes that game well over the total. Like the Pacers, they got the cover and the bonus. They got the win as well.
The Pacers a good dog this year, not just covering numbers, 14-3 now against the spread, but also 13-14 outright when booked as a dog. Indiana battling for playoff spots around the Eastern Conference, same for Minnesota. Let's talk some NFL news quickly here, DRS. The Philadelphia Eagles extending Lane Johnson and adding Azeez Ojulari to try to provide some defensive front depth.
Yeah, picked up a couple defensive ends. Obviously, no idea what's going to happen with Bryce Huff, but the Eagles do have a couple young guns on the defensive end. Just trying to fortify there and not spend a lot of money, understanding what payroll they have for the next couple years and extending some of the young superstars that they have. Solid move for the Eagles, taking care of Lane Johnson. And again, as I like to say with Howie Roseman, that adjustment to give him $8 million probably lowered his cap hit as well. Howie the genius continues to cook in the kitchen.
Again, UNC, the last team into the 2025 Field of 68 for the NCAA tournament. Many teams felt as though they were snubbed, probably no more than West Virginia. The governor of West Virginia yesterday holding a press conference, DRS, calling the National Collegiate Association, Athletic Association, the NCAA, the National Corruption Athletic Association, and is not happy with West Virginia getting snubbed from the big dance.
Nope, make one phone call, get Doge in there, clean it out right now. Let's have an investigation of why West Virginia was left out. Seems unfair that Carolina got in. I might be back in this investigation here.
Yeah, I don't think Doge is getting involved with this one. Just fix Twitter. Anyway, as we go on to the rest of college hoops, a surprising move yesterday Iona after making the MAC championship game in year number two under Tobin Anderson fires Anderson. A shocking move around college hoops.
Not really. When you take a look at Iona, Patino built that program from scratch. And at this point, you take a look at a coach came in and sully the name of the great Patino. Got to be fired here. Maybe they can go back and offer more money to Patino to get him to come back to New Rochelle. How about that?
I like what you did right there, trying to anger a fellow Sports Grid employee, Tim Kouris, and Rick Pitino built up a great program. But Tobin Anderson was doing much of the same, making a move for an NBA assistant apparently in New Rochelle. More on the Early Line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Tuesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. I promise we will get to the madness in just a little bit, but quickly, a 10-game slate around the association. To recap for you from a Monday night, we've only got about 4 weeks remaining in this NBA regular season. Most teams have 13, 14, 15 games at most to play in the 82-game regular season around the NBA. In the Golden State Warriors, after the acquisition of Jimmy Butler, playing incredible basketball. In fact, with Butler in the fold entering last night, the Dubs had won 14 of 15 games, DRS. Golden State had won 7 consecutive entering last night. When you and I were live in studio together yesterday morning, this was around a 2.5, 3-point spread in favor of Golden State at home in San Francisco against the Denver Nuggets. When I was making my notes for today's show yesterday around 6 p.m. Eastern time, 4-point spread in favor of Golden State, and then it became an 8-point spread, and then it became nearly a 13-point spread by the time we got the tip late night in Northern California, because no Nikola Jokic, no Jamal Murray, no Christian Brown for the Denver Nuggets, and still no issue. The Nuggets went on the road outright as, let's just call it, a hefty underdog, 114-105, led by 38 points from Aaron Gordon, snapping the Warriors' 7-game win streak.
Now, looks like Adam Silver's going to have to dip into another investigation into why these NBA teams are benching just about every starter without notice coming into it. But having said that, that means the Golden State Warriors should have came away with a walkaway victory, 140-98, because how could the Denver Nuggets even compete with a team as hot as the Golden State Warriors? Well, then you get Aaron Gordon say, all right, everybody's out. Let me have a day. 14 of 23 from the field, which included 4 of 6 from three-point range, 6 of 6 from the free throw line for 38 points, and then just have Russell Westbrook get back in the time machine and say, Mr. Triple-double is here, 12, 12, and 16. Yes, 16 assists for Russell Westbrook. That's a crazy game, but it just goes to show you, like, you know, we talk about like any given night things can happen. That was just unexpected. That is an easy victory for the Warriors that they somehow let squander, which I still can't fathom, because if you see the final score, like, yeah, Denver's a pretty good team. Jokic probably had a big night, but basically nobody played. Like, when your superstars are sitting this one out and you still win on the road, that's a plus one for the Denver Nuggets, who now improved to 44-25 on the season. A needed victory for them, a found victory even better.
In DRS, a needed victory is correct. Denver trying to battle for that number two seed in the Western Conference, and the Rockets were getting tested in Philadelphia, as we'll show you in just a moment. Houston ends up with an OT victory against the 76ers in H-Town. Denver's trying to stay and keep pace with the Rockets as well. 38 points out of Aaron Gordon. That triple-double from Russell Westbrook. Michael Porter Jr. pouring in 21 as well. It was really Stephen Curry who did not perform all that well for Golden State. 6 of 21 from the floor. The Dubs shot a measly percentage from deep as a team, just about 24%. Jimmy Butler had a good night, 23 points, 8 boards, and 6 dimes. Not enough for the Dubs. And maybe that 7-game win streak was trending toward a conclusion. They had only covered once in their last 5 wins. So big victory for the Nuggets outright on the road. And Donnie, as you and I always say, and you aptly point out basically on a daily basis, when we are here at 10 a.m. Eastern time, previewing a game out in California that's not going to start until after 10 p.m. Eastern time, over 12 hours later, it's difficult to get a true picture of who is going to be out there in the starting five, who is going to be playing. We saw that last night in San Fran.
Yeah, and also, and the it bounces both ways. Like, if you would have told me, like, hey, I liked him yesterday with the full starting lineup for the Nuggets, and by game time, you're already counting your money. It's like, wait a second, I got a free 10 points in an NBA game. This is going to be a breeze and a blowout, only to lose, which is crazy. But after the game, you hear, look, Steve Kerr say, man, Steph looks like he is exhausted out there. Well, how about this? The NBA sets them up on a back-to-back tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks. Possibly Steph Curry sitting this out because he's quote-unquote, you know, really tired. That line moved overnight, -3.5 from the Warriors to around a 3 to 3.5 point favorite now, and maybe more now with the Milwaukee Bucks. So things move at a fast pace in the NBA, but you're right. Handicapping these games shouldn't be so hard hours before the game, let alone you have to wait till the starting lineups come out. Come on now, it's madness.
Just a four-game slate tonight in the NBA. The association understanding that the madness begins in Dayton, Ohio. But to Donnie's point, Golden State, 3.5-point home dog against those Bucks. The Dubs were on a lengthy win streak, 7 in a row. It was the second longest active win streak in the Western Conference and around the NBA. The longest entering Monday night, Minnesota Timberwolves, winners of 8 straight. And those two teams, Golden State and Minnesota, battling for the 6 and 7 spots, of course, trying to get out and stay out of the play-in tournament. And that win streak for Minnesota also coming to a close. That 8-game win streak for the T-Wolves ended last night by Obi Toppin and the Indiana Pacers, winning in OT 132-130 outright as an 8.5-point dog. A huge night for Obi Toppin, 34 points to pace the Pacers. And Donnie, 2 go-ahead threes in the final 30 seconds in OT, including the game winner with just over 3 seconds remaining.
Yeah, converted 19 of 23 free throws, good for 83%. But how about the three-point line for the road team Pacers? We used to get efficiency at home because you're used to shooting in your home gym. But how about 46% as a team from three on the road against a pretty good defensive team? You know, when Rudy Gobert's in the lineup, you got to maximize your effort from the three-point line. And they did that last night, getting around 7.5 to 8.5 points game time here. I like the Pacers in this game, handling their business, showing that they do have a lot of talent when things go correctly like they did last night. Solid win on the road here. Hey, look. Sooner or later, you're going to have to lose basketball games for the Timberwolves. This wasn't like the Timberwolves lost against the B team for the Pacers. They got a pretty good punch. Good for the Pacers.
And you saw it there, a little bit of bad blood between the two sides. Yeah. Andrew Nembhard and Rudy Gobert both ejected after a scuffle in that basketball game. But a missed opportunity, nonetheless, for the Timberwolves. Because of Golden State's uncharacteristic loss, Minnesota could have taken the advantage, been in the sixth spot in the Western Conference standings, putting the Dubs back into play-in tourney position. Obi Toppin, of course, had other ideas. Indiana entered last night, not covering in 6 straight, had not covered in 3 consecutive since the All-Star break, booked as an underdog. But the Pacers this year, a great dog, 14-13 against the spread. All right, a little bit above 500, but 13-14 outright, straight up when they have been booked as an underdog as well. We'll round out the NBA, looking at our 10-game slate from last night, including the New York Knicks returning back to the Garden. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
10 games slate around the association from a Monday night. We recap it for you here live on a Tuesday morning on the early line on SportsGrid. DRS, the New York Knicks, back inside Madison Square Garden. Had to clear, of course, their home last week as the Big East tournament was the focus in the Big Apple. The New York Knicks on a 5-game road trip out west, just 2-3 straight up and 2-3 against the spread. Back at home last night against the Miami Heat. The Heat on a 7-game losing skid entering last night's affair in MSG. Make it an 8-game skid for Miami, and the New York Knicks happy to be home. A 21-point victory in that Garden party, 116-95. New York back inside Madison Square Garden, back in the win column.
Yeah, I thought the Heat would be a solid play here, getting the points and look great after the first quarter, 29-18. But by the half, you're in sort of a dogfight. And by the third quarter, you didn't even show up with the Miami Heat. Why is that? You got to bring your three-point shooting on the road. 6 of 23, which is 26%. Not even shooting from volume here, because you can have the 26% if you make 10 or 11 threes at that point. They only made 6 of those. But how about this? The New York Knicks in a game against the Miami Heat, like typically the Miami Heat, let's play defense, let's slow it down, we'll play physical. 6 for 6 from the free throw line. That's it. And they still won this game with 116 points because they brought the three-point shot back home to the Garden with them. 16 of 34, highly efficient, 47% as a team. That'll do you in every time. But again, 41 to 15 was the third quarter. It was a wrap after that.
DRS, we saw 12 guys play last night for the New York Knicks. Still no Jalen Brunson as he makes his way back from that injured ankle, but not often something you see under Tom Thibodeau. 12 guys played, 11 guys scored. 209.5 the total, pretty minimal by regular season NBA standards. Barely pushes to the over. Miami had been under in 7 of 8. New York under in 8 of their last 10 entering last night, but slightly over inside MSG. The Phoenix Suns actually have a good opportunity of being a postseason team, a play-in tourney team in the Western Conference because of all the injuries to the Dallas Mavericks and some poor play out of the Mavs as of late. Now, the Suns really haven't taken advantage of that yet, but last night, 40-point home win, 129-89 in the Valley against the Toronto Raptors. Phoenix covers at home, DRS, as an 8.5-point favorite.
Yeah, the bench mob got involved in that one. But how about the second quarter? Embarrassing effort for Toronto. 39-11, they lost that quarter in route to that 129-89 final. You take a look at Kevin Durant, only needed 26 minutes, only had 14 points. Devin Booker, 32 minutes, 27 points. Look at the bench, man. They got extended minutes and extended time to have some fun, because the one thing that we do know is Phoenix still is playing for that playoff positioning where it's like, hey, you know what? Somehow. It's a veteran team. We're going to break this team up in the offseason. Let's just see if we can have one last go at it. Maybe we catch lightning in a bottle, which I don't think is going to happen, but I do think they make the play-in round. Having said that, for the Toronto Raptors, they're really in ping-pong ball mode at this point, and they understand that. They got hammered on the road, and they're just fine with that.
And Donnie, the Toronto Raptors, though, have been a great cover team this year. They have been booked as an underdog in 60 of 69 games. Entering last night, 36-22-1 against the spread. Fourth best cover percentage all around the NBA, booked as a dog and booked as an underdog far more frequently than anybody that is in front of them. Not last night, losing by 40, coming nowhere close to a cover as an 8.5-point underdog. The Suns now just 6-9 straight up since the All-Star break, 4-4 against the spread, booked as a favorite in that span. And yet, still have a chance of being in the Western Conference play-in tournament, just a full game now behind the Dallas Mavericks for that 10th spot in the Western Conference standings. We talked about the Golden State Warriors seeing their 7-game win streak snap last night. 8-game win streak for Minnesota comes to a close. So the longest active win streak in the NBA now belongs to the Houston Rockets. Make it 7 consecutive victories, but not easy last night, DRS, for Houston. They win in OT over the 76ers, 144-137. But Houston was down by 20-plus at the halftime break at home. Quentin Grimes continues to score for the Sixers. They do cover as a 16.5-point dog. Houston ends up winning in the extra session.
46-13 out of Quentin Grimes. And again, man, forget the Grammy Awards. It's the Grimy Awards almost happened again last night. And it's not what Sixers fans wanted to happen. Up 21 points at the break. Looked like they were going to win that game. Thank goodness I woke up and was surprised to see they lost because of how well they were playing in the first half. Edwards, Brissett, Butler, Grimes, and Council the fourth. This is a tanking lineup, boys. Tank. What are you doing?
3-11 for the Sixers straight up now since the All-Star break, but they have covered in 4 of their last 5, booked as a dog. We'll check in on the odds in the NBA next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Around the association we go, one final time before we set the stage for the madness that truly begins tonight in Dayton, Ohio, with our first four action, a doubleheader of games that we will preview throughout these next 2.5 hours. But DRS, once March Madness comes to a close and the 2025 men's and women's NCAA tournaments are in the books, we're going to focus on the NBA because after that point in early April, probably only about a week remains in that regular season to figure out the playoff positioning and, of course, update the odds in the run for an NBA championship. And we do have a slight change since the last time we showed you the title odds around the association. The Boston Celtics, who way back after they won championship number 18 last year, were booked as the favorites early in the offseason, all preseason long. The entirety of this regular season to this point are no longer the favorites. The Oklahoma City Thunder at plus 175, now 15 cents in front of the C's.
Yeah, and look, I like where the line is going at this point here because you're taking a look at the favorite, Oklahoma City Thunder, handling their business against the Celtics in the regular season, having a fantastic season, going to have a better record than the Boston Celtics. So if they do match up in the NBA Finals, they will have home court advantage, and yep, it just plays out that way. So we're finally starting to see, hey, look, it's not just about the Celtics, who are, yes, maybe the best overall team when completely healthy, but things are working against them. Like the Thunder are just a great basketball team handling their business and playing well against the Celtics. And again, we'll have home court advantage, so they should have the slight. We're not talking about the Thunder here. Should be minus one, let's just say plus 100 or minus 130 to win the NBA championship, and the Celtics should be 5 or 6 to 1. But we're finally getting to the point where we're showing that respect through the betting markets to OKC as being a better team right now than the Boston Celtics. And it's not about playing in the NCAA tournament, Ben, where it's a neutral championship game and it's may the best team win. No, it's a 7-game series that Oklahoma City Thunder has been fantastic at home and would have home court advantage. It only makes sense.
And Donnie, I think it also goes to speak about the path for both of those teams to reach the NBA Finals, because right now, Oklahoma City, 12.5 game lead for that one spot around the Western Conference. We are very, very close to OKC clinching that number one overall seed with only about 14 games left in average for every team around the NBA. So DRS, the Thunder right now, a minus 145 favorite to win the Western Conference, but they also back up the odds in terms of their record, having the best by far out West and their path. They will have home court advantage. Boston, a minus 140 favorite still to win the Eastern Conference, and yet more than likely are going to be the two seed. The C's trail the Cleveland Cavaliers by 7.5 games for that one spot in the Eastern Conference. Now, the Cavs did have their 16-game win streak snapped by the Magic over the weekend, but Cleveland's still very comfortable in that number one overall seed spot in the Eastern Conference. And that still is the distinction. Oklahoma City, far and away by itself in the Western Conference. Cleveland in front of the Boston Celtics. The C's only would not have home floor advantage in a championship set against the Thunder. The C's would not have home floor advantage in an Eastern Conference Finals against Cleveland.
Yes, and we take a look at that number that used to sit at 12-1 and 11-1 and 10-1, now down to 5-1, and show some respect here. And I love to see that because we're not just resting on our laurels as we continue to talk about how good the Celtics are, the reigning world champions. They're a talented roster and they have firepower off the bench for days. But understand this once again, it's not a single game playoff on a neutral court. Home court advantage doesn't matter. And you might say to yourself, like, well, Cleveland struggles a little bit at home. They're great. No. These teams are phenomenal with single-digit losses at home for a reason, and also having the home court advantage makes a huge difference. You can argue right now if you put the Cavaliers and the Celtics on a neutral court, a lot of people would still take the Cavaliers. And look at that price point difference, plus 190 to 5-1 still. I'm interested to see how close that number even gets, because if you're putting a match on it, obviously – if the number for the Cavaliers changes, that means Oklahoma City, Boston, and Denver Nuggets, you get the picture would shift slightly as well. But looking at the Cavaliers myself, I still think before the end of the regular season, that price is going to be shorter than 5-1, and rightfully so.
I think it should be, right? Because, yeah. Donnie, look at the odds distinction right there. We have three teams separated by just over $3 in terms of the NBA championship odds. Boston in front of Cleveland by just over $3 as well. When you look at the Eastern Conference odds specifically, the C's minus 140, Cleveland at plus 180. And then you jump all the way back to the New York Knicks at a 12-1 price. Here's what the odds makers are expecting. In the final month of this NBA regular season, Oklahoma City going to blow by everybody in the Western Conference. Eastern Conference Finals matchup predicted to be Boston against Cleveland when the Cavs would have home floor advantage. So I think the question then from a value perspective, where do you look outside of the top three numbers in those NBA Finals odds? Is it the Denver Nuggets, who have won a championship recently? Is it LeBron and Luka when healthy for the Lakers? Big home victory last night against the San Antonio Spurs. Is it another spot out east? Where do you go, DRS? Because you can find some value with some rather long numbers compared to those top three.
Like, I guess if you're looking at the Clippers price at 120-1, which is insanity, when that team has a lot of veteran-laden superstars here, some of those guys do have a ring, you're looking at price point at that point. Because if you slide up, it really feels like it's the Thunder, it's the Celtics, and the Cavaliers in one tier. But you still do have the Nuggets and the Lakers because they have firepower. The Nuggets won a championship. The other team, the Lakers, obviously add Luka Doncic and LeBron James if they're healthy. That's superstar talent to go through. But when I take a look at teams like 21-1 for the Warriors, like, they don't move the needle, not just because they lost last night in a horrific, you know, effort against the Nuggets themselves. The Knicks, they're a superstar team, but it just doesn't feel like when they measure up against the higher-up teams in the NBA, they come away with too many victories, which is why they're priced lower. The Timberwolves, does that get you excited? How about Ja Morant, Desmond Bain over there for the Grizzlies? Doesn't get me excited. It's the tier of three, but if I'm looking to take a long-term shot, it's probably the Clippers at 120-1. Not because I love the team, just the price point I don't think reflects the talent that they have and the veterans that once you get to the playoffs, you get the extended rest time. But the big three, probably going to carry it away. And that's the Thunder, the Celtics, and the Cavs. Yeah.
The Clippers right now, also the eighth seed in the Western Conference. They would be in a play-in tournament. They would only have to win one game if they stay in that play-in spot. They've got a 3.5 game advantage over Sacramento for the 8-9 distinction in the Western Conference standings. Donnie, I think the value right now is with Denver and Los Angeles, that being the Lakers. But it will be really interesting to see how the Western Conference playoff standings do end up shaking out. Houston, Denver, LA being the Lakers, and the Memphis Grizzlies. Those four teams right now, separated by only a game between four clubs, and those are the seed lists from 2-5 currently in the Western Conference standings. Why I think that is so critical, one, some difficult opening round matchups, but if we're giving Oklahoma City the benefit of the doubt, despite not really having proven it so far with this young core in the postseason, you want to try to be a 2 or 3 seed, right? To avoid OKC, to have that value in the hedge out opportunity, the middling opportunity based on a series price in the Western Conference Finals. And the best way of doing that, of course, is to be on the opposite end of the bracket, avoiding OKC until you were to get to that best of seven WCF set. So that's where I really think you look right now. Denver would be in position. They are the 3 seed. They have the same exact record as the Rockets, but based on a couple of tiebreakers, Houston does have that slight advantage right now. It'll be really interesting, I think, to how the Western Conference standings finalizes themselves in the regular season, and then I think you go back and get some value once again in the Western Conference odds or the NBA championship odds for the team you believe in most, who is opposite Oklahoma City in the Western Conference playoff bracket.
Yeah, and you even take a look at the bottom of that bracket where I do think the Phoenix Suns are going to overtake the Dallas Mavericks into that 10 spot here and make the play-in round. Now, is that a success for the Phoenix Suns coming into the season? Well, that's superstar talent. No, it's not. But at least you can see, like, we're not throwing in the towel. Our superstars are still playing, as we said. They'll break them up over the summer. However, if you are looking at that Clippers ticket right now, let's just say it goes just by the seeding that we currently have right now. So if the season ended today, the 8th seed would be the Clippers. The number 1 seed is the Oklahoma City Thunder. Your ticket's in play right away. You don't have to wait. Say, hey, we avoided them, and maybe it's round number 2. We'll see if they can stack up right off the bat and are worthy of that plus 120 ticket.
All right, enough of NBA. It's time for college basketball.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Today, the madness officially begins. First for action in Dayton, Ohio, a doubleheader of games. First up, it's Alabama State, the champions out of the SWAC, in a big matchup taking on St. Francis, PA, the champions from the NAC, and NDRS, our nightcap, some brand name programs. In fact, two schools that have played in two of the three last national championship games. In 2022, it was North Carolina as an 8 seed on a magical run, coming up short against Kansas. Two seasons ago, San Diego State on the wrong side against UConn. Now in first four action tonight in Dayton. And of course, UNC being in this game, being in the big dance at all, ruffled some feathers on selection Sunday night. Some believing Carolina undeserving of their bid into the big dance. And a lot of those people from Morgantown, West Virginia. The Mountaineers felt as though they were snubbed. I know Donnie is going to love this. Here was the West Virginia governor, Patrick Morrissey, yesterday calling out the NCAA.
Six quad one wins.
Ball.
And that was combined with an undefeated record against quad three and quad four opponents. Three wins against top 10 teams and the 24th toughest schedule in America. Mm. West Virginia deserved to be in the NCAA tournament. No doubt. This was a miscarriage of justice and robbery at the highest levels. Mm. Now, who was the last team to get into the tournament? Oof. Ahead of the Mountaineers. That would be the University of North Carolina. Now, let's see how their resume stacks up.
Mm.
The Tar Heels went 1-12 in quad one games and even had a quad three loss.
That's okay. That's how
more.
We're going to
need more.
Great stuff there out of Patrick Morrissey, though, who was really talking ball. And he's looking through the metrics and those predictive analytics that should determine the resumes that make it into the NCAA tournament. The one thing he did not mention about UNC, though, which still to this day is why I believe Carolina got the upper hand into the big dance, their non-conference strength of schedule being the fifth most difficult around the country. But of course, one of the beautiful things about that press conference, DRS, and something you couldn't really see on the pedestal when he was up there, what he was speaking at, the dais, as if you will, whatever it's called, the NCAA, National Collegiate Athletic Association, was actually changed there. National Corruption Athletic Association. Zinger.
Yeah, I like where this guy's going right here. I think I would vote for him as well. Laying out the perfect plan here, understanding that a lot of money is at stake for his state university, and he's going after. That guy has the states back here. Now, understand this. We talk about, like, the people in the room. Like, explain this to me, Ben. Is it 12 guys? Like, who's the committee? Like, how many people do we have on this committee that's behind closed doors? Do we know? Is there an exact number of people?
Certainly so. Let me find it for you. I believe it is 12, including chairman, of course, Bubba Cunningham, who is the athletic director for North Carolina. Continue as I make sure we get that correct.
Like, here's the job of the committee 12, to understand the pulse of the country, because when we watch the brackets, yes, we're not going to agree on every single seed line, like Michigan winning a Big Ten championship game, getting hit. Like, it's almost like Michigan would have been a 4 seed if they had lost that game because they liked the fight in the team. They gave them the 5 seed because they won the Big Ten. Some things don't make sense, but understand this. They have every application and every avenue of interest open to them where they can just take a peek outside. We talk about this, like, if you were ever on a jury, and a high-profile jury, you're sequestered. No TV, no phone, don't speak to anybody on the outside. And if they came up with this, like, ooh, that's interesting what they did. But that's not what they do, Ben. They have they read ESPN, they read bracketology, they read every bracket person out there, and they go, all right, when it all comes down to this, let's take one final glimpse. And correct me if I'm wrong, one of the Total Tally publications that had 100-plus, you know, brackets in there where West Virginia was in every single bracket. Doesn't that tell the group inside, like, hey guys, are we doing this correctly here? Because if it was 60 had them in, 60 had them out, hey, look, that's 50-50. That's a coin flip. Some people are going to be mad, but the majority is going to understand. Like, how do we get to a point where the smartest people typically in the room are coming up with an equation where you want to take that crowdsourcing and say, are we doing this correctly? Maybe we should put West Virginia in. Like, that's the only thing, Ben, I'm upset about. I like Carolina in. It's a fun team to bet. They're up and down the court, and they're going to be a lightning rod. That's good for money. That's good for television ratings. We get that. But explain the process more to me of how we actually got them in. That's all I want to know.
A 12-member selection committee confirmed there are 12. They sit together over weeks, especially in the final month of the regular season. They give you that small bracket reveal of the top 16 seeds. But really, not many people have many issues with the top of the bracket. It's some seed discrepancies and most notably the bubble. So yes, they make their determinations based on the team sheets that they have in front of them that include all the metrics, your victories in every single quad, your non-conference strength of schedule, your overall strength of schedule, every metric available they reportedly use. And although Bubba Cunningham, who is the AD at North Carolina, excuses himself from the room in those deliberations, in those conversations, he walks right back in afterward. He's with you every single minute else outside of that conversation. If you like Bubba Cunningham, you're probably thinking, let's do it for Bubba, right? And there is the incentive, of course, for those specific schools, and not just North Carolina DRS, the ACC as a whole, to get more members and have more opportunities in the NCAA tournament to win games and cash checks. It is the reality of the situation. Now, I am not some conspiracy theorist where I believe that is what truly happened, but I would agree with you that sometimes the selection process does seem flawed, and there has been some kind of reinvigorated calls, if you will, for not ADs and conference commissioners around the sport to come together and sit in that room and make all of these determinations, but the actual bracketologists that has become its own science and field in the last 25 years after Joe Lunardi basically started it, to have those bracketologists that follow the sport for 6 months, the entirety of the regular season, that make their predictions, kind of be the people in the room to make the final call.
We hated the BCS, right? Because it was computers and giving us two teams here, right? And you saw some of the snubs over the 20 years of the BCS. But for me, why don't we have a BCS model that just gets updated every Monday of the season, which lets you know exactly where teams stand, even heading into the final game here, where you can anticipate that. It's so much easier and so much more transparent than 12 guys going behind a door and coming out like the smoke's coming out with the Pope, like, hey, we got the bracket here and you guys aren't going to like it. Stop.
In a way we do. It's called the net rankings. We'll continue the conversation up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The madness begins tonight in Dayton, Ohio, with our first four matchups, a doubleheader of games tonight there at UD Arena. DRS, of course, yesterday, a big story was Patrick Morrissey, West Virginia's governor, coming out and calling out the NCAA for the inclusion of North Carolina into the Big Dance and a snub of his home state, that being the Mountaineers. If we look once again at the last four teams into the NCAA tournament and the first four out, you asked for that predictive model. The NCAA does use the net rankings, something that have been there since 2019. And North Carolina, of all of the bubble teams in consideration, the highest net ranking, 36th overall. Again, that's not necessarily the be-all, end-all. That's not the only metric that is used to consider these resumes, but just something to pay attention to as we try to do this moving forward.
Why don't we have one metric? Like, why is that so hard? Like, why can't you have the one computer that we all follow that gets updated? You can update it round the clock in real time as you can watch it. But why would we, though?
Because we have issues with the BCS. You have issues with everything.
Yeah, but
Donnie, you know that.
BCS is top two. Yeah, but the BCS was top two and top. That was ridiculous.
Sure.
You're talking about, like, we're not really up. Like, nobody cares that UNC and West Virginia are in or out. They're not even going to fathom into anything that we're talking about. But I just would understand where, like, I don't get as upset. Like, hey, Duke wasn't on the one line. They're on the two line. It's fun to have this conversation now, but it's a simple fix. Like, nobody would be mad on the final day of the season where you had North Carolina play, knowing, understanding, if they don't win, or let's just say lose by 3 points or less, they're not making the tournament. I would love that, and so would the rest of the public, as opposed to one guy who hosts the committee, who's from North Carolina, act like he had nothing to do with it, and the people in the room were his friends all along, like, hey, we can't snub him here. Nobody's in here from West Virginia. Nobody's ever going to care. Hey, Bubba, man, love you. We put your team in. Great. Down the line, I'll look out for all you guys as well. Like, we obviously, we don't think it went down that way, but just the way it plays out. Right. But if we had just one number to look at where we understand exactly where a team stands, phenomenal. I would love that.
Listen, and I agree in essence, we would still get mad at that regardless because we get mad at everything even as we try to change the process. It is that idea of debate. I am darn sure we have the graphic that shows the net ranking of the four teams that made it in to the NCAA tournament. We do not. All right, well, we'll get back to that at another time then. Let's keep moving on because we'll preview the first four matchups in just a little bit. DRS, a weird moment yesterday. Because we have all of the extra postseason tournaments, including the NIT, the CBI, now the Crown sponsored by Fox Sports, there are some teams that want to keep playing ball, and some may be agreeing to multiple tournaments at the same time, which is what happened and then also plagued South Alabama. Richie Riley, the head coach for the Jags out of the Sun Belt, who had a great opportunity to win that league, says the NIT offered the Jaguars a spot, then rescinded the invitations later after another team, I believe UC Riverside, I will confirm, backed out of the CBI. So they invited South Alabama, and then they had to say, about that invite, we now have to take it back, putting South Alabama in a terrible spot. And as Richie Riley tweeted out in a statement, what they did to us last night is inexcusable.
It's ridiculous. And the optics, as we always talk about, are bad. But also understand this from the NIT. Like, are we saying, like, the TV sponsors are going to kill us if we don't have UC Riverside in here? There's such a big draw. Like, what was the deal? You made a mistake. You extended it. How about you just go, hey, NIT, all right, you know what? We'll just put one more team in here to balance it out and keep it simple, because I'm sure a lot of teams would like to play extra basketball in the NIT. Like, why did it have to go down this route? You extended it. And also tell the other team, hey, look, there was confusion. You didn't get it. You accepted from another league and was sort of hedging your bets on which play you would play and what's the better tournament. Nonsense. The NIT is completely at fault here. In the grand scheme of things, does it matter?
Sure.
No, it doesn't. It's just a bad look. South Alabama should be going. UC Riverside should be going to whatever tournament they were playing in. And nobody cares about it. You know why we care now? Because we found out about it. If this never happened, I'm like, hey, South Alabama's in great, or UC Riverside's in great. Nobody cares. But now we care because stuff like this goes down and it's ridiculous.
UC Riverside was involved in both the CBI and NIT brackets that came out on Sunday night. The NIT probably should have confirmed what UC Riverside was going to decide to do before they even extended the invite elsewhere. And as we shared earlier in the show, Iona parting ways yesterday with head coach Tobin Anderson, who had just led the Gaels to the MAC tournament title game. One win away from the NCAA tournament after just his second year on campus. Of course, Tobin Anderson, well known for what he did with Fairleigh Dickinson, the upset over Purdue, now two tournaments ago.
Most people from Iona have no idea how good they had it. When Pitino got there, we first heard the name Iona. Now that he's gone, he's trying to get that respect back right now. You got to win at Iona. It's that plain and simple.
All right, hour number two next.